Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Dear viewers, in the previous session, we had started to discuss the collection of the Quran narrative as found in the Al Jami' al Sahih of Imam Bukhari. We had started to critically analyze the narrative, and we had raised some of the first question which arises on this narrative. And although it's called the collection of the Quran narrative, but perhaps a more appropriate title to this would be the copying out of the Quran, because there was no collection; it was actually copying out of the Quran of Hafsa. So, radhiyallahu ta'ala anha. So, we had seen in the last session that this whole event, the way it has been reported in the Al-Jami' al-Sahih of Imam Bukhari, is highly improbable, because the way it has been recorded in history is such a frail and weak record, and the way it has been reported, that it is very, very unlikely that this event had taken place, the way it has been reported in the Al-Jami' al-Sahih of Imam Bukhari. We had seen, first of all, that the narrative, the way it has been recorded, is a gharib narrative. The only person who reports this narrative is Anas ibn Malik. And not only is it gharib in its origin, but is in the second tier also it is gharib, because the only person who reports from Anas ibn Malik is Ibn Shahab Zuhri, in spite of the fact that Anas has several, and this is reported, over 200 students. So it is very strange that this narrative is reported by a single person. And then from him also a single person reports, giving the fact that the nature of this event is such that it should have been reported by other people. Why is it that it is reported by such a single individual in the first two tiers? And we had also seen that there were some of the earliest Muslim history and hadith books are absolutely devoid of the mention of any details which are found in this narrative. We had seen the Muwatta of Imam Malik and the Al-Jami' al-Sahih of Imam Muslim being devoid of this narrative. And we had also seen some of the earlier history books of Muslim history being devoid of any mention of this collection or copying out episode which took place in the time of the Caliph Usman. And we had started to analyze the personnel which had been mentioned in this narrative, and we have seen that there are six people who figure in this narrative, and we also find that the biographical accounts of these of various personalities are found in various history books of amongst Muslims. And we had started to analyze the first of these accounts, and that was actually we had completed that, and that was the account of Usman ibn Affan. And we had seen how early Muslim books and later Muslim hadiths were history books are totally devoid of any role of Usman رضي الله عنه in having these copies made, as is mentioned in this narrative by Imam Bukhari. Now we continue this journey, and we take up some of the other personalities which are mentioned in this narrative, and see whether their biographical accounts and their life histories, the way they have been reported in Muslim history works, whether they contain any allusion, any reference to this task which Usman seems to have supervised or carried out in this narrative as recorded by Imam Bukhari in his Al-Jami' al-Sahih. So we take the case of Huzaifa ibn al-Jaman first. Now, in his biographical note on him, Ibn Sa'd records that he took part in the Battle of Uhud and the Battle of Trench in the time of the Prophet and in all subsequent battles, and that Umar appointed him as the governor of Madayan, and that he was assassinated in Madayan after he died in Madayan actually after the assassination of the Caliph Usman رضي الله عنه, but there is no mention of his reporting any differences in reading which this narrative says. We find this narrative reporting the fact that it was Huzaifa ibn al-Jaman, the trusted general of Usman, who when returning from the fronts of Armenia and Azerbaijan, when he was fighting alongside the armies of Syria and Kufa, that he found the people of of Syria and Kufa, the armies, the soldiers of Syria and Kufan armies fighting with each other regarding various differences in reading the Quran. So he was a person. But as far as biography is concerned in Ibn Sa'd, as I said, we find that there is no such report found there. And not only this, we find that his the brief biographical sketches which are found in Al-Bukhari's At-Tariq al-Kabir and Ibn Abdul-Barr's Al-Istiyab and Ibn Hajar's Al-Isaba, they are also devoid of any such mention. Not only this, but Zahabi Siru Alam al-Nubala, which is one of the premier works on biographical sketches, it traces out life histories and describes what people did in their lives. So it's like a voluminous life history, a companion of life histories of various Muslim personnel. And we have a detailed life history being mentioned regarding Huzaifa ibn al-Jaman. And we must also find that, take note of the fact that Zahabi was as late, he lived as late as the 8th century. So a person in his times, a person living in his times, a person who is living in the time of the 8th century, even like a person like him, he has not recorded while writing out the life history of Huzaifa that he reported any such differences vis-a-vis reading the Quran. Now, let's move on to the next person. The third person to have to figure in this narrative is Zayd ibn Thabit. Now, Ibn Sa'd's short biographical note on Zayd has already been referred to in my previous talks, one of the previous talks, in which we were discussing the collection of the Quran under the Caliph Abu Bakr. And we have seen that Ibn Sa'd mentions no such role of him, of copying out the Quran in his times. Now, a historical work which is completely devoid of any mention of the collection of the Quran by Zayd in the times of Abu Bakr and Usman is Imam Bukhari's At-Tariq al-Kabir, even though it contains a brief biographical note on Zayd, but it does not contain any reference to the fact that he had any role in writing the Quran in the times of Abu Bakr or having it or being part of the committee which was responsible of copying out the Quran. Similarly, Al-Fasafi's Al-Ma'rifa wa Tariq, Ibn Qutaybah's Al-Ma'arif, and An-Nasa'i's Fazail al-Quran, Fazail al-Sahaba, they give brief biographical accounts of Zayd ibn Thabit. And none of these three mentions anything regarding his involvement in any such task in the time of the Caliph Usman. Although Khalifa ibn Khayyat's Tariq does not mention biographical accounts and is a year-wise account of events, it does not contain any record on the collection of the Quran, what to speak of Zayd's involvement. It does mention that he was a scribe. He was a scribe in the times of the Prophet and later in the times of Abu Bakr and Umar radiallahu anhum. His assignment as the governor of Medina in the time of Umar, this has also been recorded. He is also reported to have been present at the time of Usman's murder. Usman radiallahu anhu deputed him as the governor of Medina in the year he died. He led the Muslims at Hajj. Or the fact that there exists a discrepancy in his year of death. So all these things have been reported by Khalifa. But there is no such mention vis-a-vis his role in the collection or copying of the Quran. Ibn Hajar mentions in his Al-Isaba that he collected the Quran in the time of the Caliph Abu Bakr. However, we do not find any mention of his role in the times of Usman in any such work. So this is the case of Zayd ibn Thabit. Now let's move on to the fourth person who was of course a member of the committee which was constituted to have the Qurans copied out. So his name is Abdullah ibn Zubair, and there is no mention of his role in his biographical note in Al-Isaba Al-Isaba of Ibn Hajar. His biography is not found in Ibn Sa'd's At-Tabaqat al-Kubra. And you must take note of the fact that Al-Isaba by Ibn Hajar is again a very late work on history or biographical accounts, because we know that Ibn Hajar lived in the 9th century Hijra and he died in 852 Hijra. So a person as late as Ibn Hajar has not recorded any such thing. So, as I said, the brief the biographical note on him in Ibn Sa'd's At-Tabaqat al-Kubra is also devoid of any role that he played in this regard. Furthermore, we find that biographical notes in Al-Bukhari's At-Tariq al-Kabir, Ibn Qutaybah's Al-Ma'arif, and Al-Fasawi's Al-Ma'rifa wa-Tariq also do not mention any such role that he had played in the copying out of the Quran or being part of the committee. There is a somewhat detailed note in Ibn Abdul Barr's Al-Isti'ab, but again, we find there is no such mention that he took part in that committee, he was part of the committee in having the Quran copied. Now, Ibn Asakir has perhaps given the most detailed biography of Abdullah ibn Zubair, and lo and behold, it spans almost 100 pages and goes beyond 100 pages. And it is strange that even a person who has given a biography of over 100 pages of Abdullah ibn Zubair, he does not mention any role he had in this regard of copying out the Quran. Hafiz Mizzi's Tahzib al-Kamal is also devoid of this information. And then Zahabi Seir Alama Nubala is also without any such mention. And even a person as late as Ibn Hajar does not mention that he had any role in the collection of the Quran, either in his Tehzeeb al-Tehzeeb or in his Al-Isaba. Both are devoid. They both are absolutely devoid of any such role which Abdullah ibn Zubayr had played in this regard. Now, let's come to the fifth person in this regard, and his name is Abdurrahman ibn Haris ibn Hisham. We know that he was also a person who was part of the committee which was entrusted with the task of copying out the Quran. So Ibn Sa'd's, in his brief biography, he mentioned him as in a very brief biographical note. But again, there is no mention of his role in the collection or copying out of the Quran in the time of the Caliph Usman. In this biographical note, it is strange that in this biographical note, we find such details as the fact that he was 10 years old at the death of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. His widowed mother, Fatima bint Walid ibn Mughira, was married to Umar radiallahu anhu, who reared him. He was a very noble and generous person. He took part in the Battle of Jamal with Aisha radiallahu anha, which obviously was a couple of years after Usman's death, and he died in the Caliphate of Muawiyah. This is recorded by, such details are recorded by Ibn Sa'd in his At-Tabaqat al-Kubra. But it is strange that he has not recorded any such role that he played as a committee member of copying out the Quran. Now, finally, we come to Sayyid ibn al-As, who is also a member of the committee. And Ibn Sa'd mentions his brief biography, but there is no mention of his role in the collection of the Quran in the times of the Caliph Usman. Thus, for example, we find his brief biographical note in At-Tabaqat al-Kubra of Ibn Sa'd. In this particular note, he has mentioned such details as the fact that at the death of the Prophet, he was, at his request, granted land by Umar, anhu, was made the governor of Kufa, and held this post for almost 5 years. Various incidents of this tenure are described with some detail. And when he returned to Medina, he was among those who defended Usman anhu against the rebels. So all these details are recorded by Ibn Sa'd in his biographical account of Sayyid ibn al-As, but we do not find his mentioning the fact that he had any role in copying out the Quran in the times of the Caliph Usman. So this strange story continues. Again, in this very brief biographical sketch in Al-Bukhari and Bukhari's Tariq al-Kabir, we do not find any mention of his role in the collection of the Quran. And it is also known that he remained the governor of Kufa from 29 to 34 Hijra. And given the nature of the task, he could only have played a role in the committee prior to being assigned his duty, obviously, because he was the governor of Kufa as well. So all in all, viewers, this shows that all these personnel who were involved in some way or the other in copying out the Quran or supervising this copying out, their biographical accounts in history, in various history books, in various Muslim source books, and even at times of medieval times and later times, they have this lack of mention of these people playing roles the way they have been shown in this narrative. So all in all, we find that, summing up at this point of critique, I would say that it is very improbable that this event took place the way it has been recorded in the Jami' Sahih of Bukhari, because, as I said earlier on, it is absolutely strange the way it has been reported, the way a single person reports this whole event, the way it is not mentioned in premier history books and premier hadith books, and the way these personnel who took active part in this copying out, the way their biographical sketches are found in various history books. Why is it that these history books do not mention their role in this copying out or this whole endeavor? So this is the first point of critique which we have so far discussed. Now, moving on to the next point. And the next point in this regard is that the whole methodology which Usman seems to have adopted in curbing these differences is highly questionable. That a person of his sagacity, his wisdom, would have undertaken a task which is absolutely counterproductive, at least, or it does not address the issue of resolving these differences of reading, because the way he went about doing it was not sufficient. And by this, we can see that if he was the person who had tried to gather the Ummah on a single Mus'haf or on a single reading of the Mus'haf. The arrangements that he made in this regard were insufficient, because either the Quran that he had copied out, we know for sure that the Qurans, the copies of the Quran in those times, they were devoid of any vocal sounds, which means that the way a word has to be pronounced, and we know that in the absence of these pronunciation sounds and vowel sounds, a word can be pronounced variously. It can have variant readings. So in the absence of this, it is absolutely strange that Usman could have preserved or gathered the Ummah on a single reading, or because that could only have been possible if either the vowel sounds had been placed on these texts which were copied out, or at least people who were memorizers of the Quran, who knew the text by heart, were sent with these copies to various territories so that they could have taught people the right reading. Now, in this second case, we do find people saying that although it is understood that the Quran copied out was devoid of any vowel sounds, but Usman did make an endeavor to send out reciters with these copies of the Quran so that they were able to teach the people of those respective areas what the exact reading was. But here again, unfortunately, we're faced with a very similar scenario as was the one we faced earlier on, that earlier works of Muslim history are devoid of any mention of reciters being sent to various territories along with the Mus'haf. And we do find people like, for example, Abdul Fattah al-Qadhi in his Al-Qiraat fi Nazr al-Mustashriqeen wal-Mulhadeen, mentioning the fact that people were sent. And after him, we even find a person like Zurqani mentioning the fact that reciters were sent. Thus, for example, it is claimed that Zayd ibn Thabit was sent to Medina with the Medinan Mus'haf, or if the Medinan Mus'haf was prepared there, obviously he was assigned to read out at Medinan Mus'haf, which was prepared there, or meant for the people of Medina. Then it is reported by Zurqani and by Abdul Fattah al-Qadhi that Abdullah ibn Sa'ib was sent to Mecca with the Meccan Mus'haf. Mughira ibn Shurba was sent to Syria with the Syrian Mus'haf. And Amir ibn Abdul Qais was sent to Basra with the Basran Mus'haf. And finally, we find Abu Abdul Rahman al-Sulami being sent to Kufa with the Kufan Mus'haf. This is what is claimed. But again, as I said earlier on, if we take recourse to our earliest history books or even later ones, medieval ones, we find that there is no early Muslim history book mentioning the fact that these reciters were sent with the respective Mus'haf of that area, which again is absolutely strange. Thus, we find that no source specifies that, if you take these seriatim one by one, I'm going to take the case of Zayd ibn Thabit first of all, who we find is the person who was kept in Medina, and he was it is alleged that he was responsible for reading out the Medinan Codex or the Medinan Mus'haf. So no source mentions or specifies that Zayd ibn Thabit was kept in Medina by Usman to teach the Quran from the Medinan copy. And when I say sources, I refer to the Tabqat al-Kubra of Ibn Sa'd, to At-Tarikh al-Kabir of Al-Bukhari, to Al-Isti'ab of Ibn Abdul Barr, to Ibn Abdul Barr, to Al-Mizdi's Tahzib al-Kamal, to Al-Isaba of Ibn Hajar, to Tahzib al-Tahzib also of Ibn Hajar, to Abdul Baqi ibn al-Qani, who wrote out the Mujam al-Sahaba, and then Zahabi's Sayr al-Alam al-Nubala. All these works do not mention that Zayd ibn Thabit was kept in Medina by the Caliph Usman so that he could read out the Mus'haf. It was devoid of those vocal signs. Now, we come to the case of Abdullah ibn Sa'ib. Now, sources mentioned that Abdullah ibn Sa'ib was a reciter of Mecca, but no source specifies that he was sent by Usman for this purpose. There is absolutely no source which says that he was sent with this Meccan codex or Meccan Mus'haf, and he was asked to read out from this Meccan Mus'haf. And when I say sources, again, I refer to Ibn Sa'd's At-Tabaqat, Al-Kubrawi, refer to Al-Bukhari's At-Tarikh al-Kabir, Al-Zahabi's Al-Kashif, Al-Mizzi's Tahzib al-Kamal, Ibn Hajar's Tahzib al-Tahzib, Abdul Baqi, Ibn Khan's Mujam al-Sahaba, Al-Zahabi's Ma'rifat al-Qurra' al-Kibar, and Ibn Asir's Usud al-Ghaba. These sources also do not mention that he was sent with the Meccan Mus'haf. Now, we come to Mughira ibn Shu'bah. Again, we find that there is no source which specifies that Mughira ibn Shu'bah, who died in 50 Hijra, was sent to Syria by the Caliph Usman for this purpose. We know that he remained the governor of Basra and then Kufa. This is specified, but again, there are no such details which mention that he was sent with the Mus'haf. Now, Azhabi's Ma'rifat al-Qurra al-Kubar also does not mention his name amongst the reciters. Now, we know that Azhabi's Ma'rifat al-Qurra al-Kubar actually is a work which describes all the major reciters, but Mughira ibn Shu'bah is not even mentioned as a reciter, what to speak of being sent to Syria for this purpose. So, in this case, we find that Ibn Abdul Barz al-Istiyab, Az-Zahabi, Sayyid al-Alam al-Nubala, Al-Mizzi's Tahzib al-Kamal, Ibn Hajar's Tahzib al-Tahzib, Ibn Hajar's al-Isaba as well, then Abdul Baqi, Ibn Khanis, Mujam al-Sihaba, and Al-Khatib al-Baghdadi's Tariq al-Baghdad, all of them are devoid of the fact whether Mughira ibn Shu'bah was mentioned anywhere. Now, in this regard, we also need to gauge the fact that Ibn Asakir has related many details of his life and dealt with his political assignments with a lot of at length, with a lot of detail. Now, he was appointed as the governor of Basra in 16 to 17 Hijra by the Caliph Umar anhu, and later deposed by him and appointed as the governor of Kufa, and he remained its governor at the time of Umar's death. Usman deposed him in his times, and then later Muawiyah again appointed him as the governor of Kufa, a position on which he remained till his death in 50 Hijra. So we find Ibn Asakir dealing in quite a lot of detail vis-a-vis his life history. But again, there is no mention of the fact that he was sent to Syria with any codex for the purpose of reciting out to the people of Syria. Next, we come to Amir ibn Abdul Qais. Now, it is known that Amir ibn Abdul Qais was the governor of Basra. However, we do not find mention of him being sent by Usman with the Basran copy to Basra. And sources like Az-Zahabi, Sayyid al-Alam al-Nubala, Ibn Hajar's al-Isaba, Abu Nu'aym's Hilya al-Uliya, and Ibn Asakir's Tariq Medina Dimashq, they are absolutely devoid of his mention of being sent with the Basran copy to Basra. Now, as I said, the final person who is alleged to have been given with the Mus'haf and sent with it to Kufa in this regard is Abu Abdurrahman al-Sulami. Now, it is known that he taught the Quran in a mosque for 40 years in Kufa since the time of Usman. But it is not mentioned that it was Usman who actually sent him to Kufa for that purpose one of the copies meant for the territory of Kufa so that he could read out that Mus'haf. So sources like Ibn Sa'd's At-Tabqat al-Kubra, Al-Bukhari's At-Tariq al-Kabir, Al-Mizzi's Tahzib al-Kamal, Az-Zahabi's Sayyid al-Alam al-Nubala, Ibn Hajar's Tahzib al-Tahzib, and Az-Zahabi's Ma'rifat al-Qurra al-Kibar, these sources do not mention that Abu Abdurrahman al-Sulami was the person who was sent with the Kufan codex. Furthermore, it seems that no measure was adopted to set right what was in the memories of people. So this is the second part of this questionable methodology that I need to point out in this case. No order was issued by Usman to stop people from reading what was in their hearts and to follow only what was found in the copies sent by him. So even if it is accepted that these copies were made and somehow people were sufficiently instructed in the right recital, even then we find that Usman never stopped people from reciting the Quran which was in their hearts. After all, destruction of the copies would not have sufficed for this purpose, because this would have only erased the copies or destroyed them. What about the Quran which was found in the memories of the people, which was the primary source of the transmission of the Quran? We do not find Usman doing any such thing of stopping people from reading out what was in their memories. Otherwise, people obviously, in the absence of any such order, would have easily clung to whatever was found in their minds, whatever was found in their memories. So, in an era in which the transmission of the Quran which relied primarily on oral transmission, it is strange that this oral transmission there was nothing which was done by Usman to stop this erroneous oral transmission. Because after all, if there were errors in the Mus'haf, then people would have been reading it wrongly. So, all in all, viewers, we see in the second point that the whole methodology which was adopted by the Caliph Usman to eradicate these differences of reading was totally insufficient, totally counterproductive. It could not have addressed the whole issue in its totality, because neither were vowel sounds present in this Mus'haf so that people could have read the way the reading was to be read, nor were any reciters sent with these Mus'haf. It is not established. It is claimed, but it is not established. And then we find that Usman never stopped people from reading whatever it was in their memories. So the question arises that a person as sagacious, as wise, as prudent as Usman, who was actually asked to curb these differences, as reported by his trusted general, Huzaifa ibn al-Yaman, he adopted such a frail methodology, or such a suspect methodology in addressing these differences. It is highly improbable that a person of his stature would have done so. So in view of this, I would say that this is an extremely important point of critique. So viewers, we come to the end of this session today, and inshallah we'll take up some of the other important points of critique which arise on both the text and the chain of narration of this narrative. Aqulu qawli hadha wa astaghfirullaha li wa lakum wa lisa'iril muslimina wal muslimat.